This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Feinstein. Today is Thursday, April the 9th, 2015, and I'm here with my brother Mark and my sister-in-law Yona. And today we're going to be talking about wealth, one of my favorite topics, one of a lot of people's favorite topics. But one of those things that for many people can be a bit problematic if you aren't wealthy yet and you want to be wealthy. And of course, the law of attraction teaches us that if you want to get there, you have to start, you know, behaving and feeling and acting like you're already wealthy. And that's like the primary first step in order to take the journey to get there. Problem is, a lot of us don't really have the experience of being wealthy. So how does it feel to be wealthy when you don't know how it feels to be wealthy? And that's the topic of our show today. Yes. Mark, you're the one who came up with this topic. I guess perhaps we should start with what made you think of it?
I'm not sure.
I forgot Joel Osteen.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, we were listening to a message from Joel Osteen on the radio, and he had a nice show about it.
Joel Osteen, he's a broadcaster, Christian broadcaster, is that right?
Yeah, he's a pastor, Christian, mm-hmm. Yeah, pastor. He has a church in Houston, Texas, and he broadcasts his services every week.
Oh, okay. What was it that he said that got your attention and made you think about this particular topic?
excuse me. He said, the way he put it is that if you want to generate more wealth into your life, he said that the first place you start is by praising God. And I believe the key word there is praise.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires a joyful emotion, basically, a really happy feeling.
Yeah, so he was saying, you know, basically the same thing that the author of, I never remember the guy's name, The Happiness Project, is that what the book's called?
Oh, Sean Aker?
Sean Aker, yes. That basically the happiness comes before the success. So he was saying the praise precedes the blessing, and that might have been the exact title of his sermon.
Ah, okay. All right.
Yes. So he was talking about how you have to, even in the absence of all the things that you want, start right where you are, praising and thanking God for, you know, where you are right now, what you have, what you're experiencing, and then more blessings and more goodness will, you know, come to you.
Which is really that's the broad application of the law of attraction anyway, far right. Beyond wealth. And wealth is only a small piece of that.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, he didn't narrow it to wealth. He spoke of blessings in general, whatever it
abundance
is.
Abundance, yes, fullness of life.
Yeah, and happiness with, you know, whether it's family, friends, you know, your dreams coming true, whatever that may mean to you. But yeah, of course, we always, whether consciously or not, zero in on abundance in terms of finances.
Yeah, it's funny how that works when you live in a so-called, quote, real, unquote, world, where money plays such a large role, even though in the spiritual world it plays really no role at all.
Yeah. I was just listening to a recording by Abraham Hicks through Esther Hicks. Abraham through Esther Hicks. And she said something interesting, that the reason why we tend to make abundance all about finances, she says, is because finances is one of the quickest and obvious way abundance or lack of it manifests in our lives. It's the most tangible evidence that we have of whether we're in abundance or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that's definitely true for the vast majority of people. It's probably one of the first things that occurs to all of us when we hear the word abundance, not realizing, of course, that abundance means other things besides tangible wealth, but certainly it's a part of it.
Yes, definitely. And so that's why we it's a good thing because it's a quick way to tell, to, you know, to measure and to monitor. But because it's so, such a ready, evidence, we tend to tie everything to our finances and, you know, we can become desperate around it, which then, as she says, cut off the flow of abundance in our life.
Which actually makes sense when we think about it, because if you're desperate, that means you are in despair.
Right.
Well, in despair is not exactly conducive to being abundant.
Not at all.
You don't even have to believe in the law of attraction to realize that's true.
Yeah, I guess. It takes some time to kind of wrap your mind around that, though, because we've been cultured to believe that, you know, if there's something lacking, then we got to get up and do until it's there.
That's what comes from living in a real world, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you're constantly inundated by the inputs of reality, as we understand
right.
it,
mm-hmm.
you react to it. I mean, we are trained to react to reality just by being here. That makes it challenging.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to try to apply a spiritual principle, that starts to become really challenging.
Right, exactly.
The other thing about abundance and wealth is that because it's the focus of so many people's attention, it also tends to get a lot of bad press.
Right, yes, that's true.
And probably the most common form of that is the belief that money is the root of all evil.
Right, yes. And it doesn't help that that is actually a misquotation of the actual Bible text. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil.
That's true. That is what it says. But then, but we could take it to the next step, which is the whole question of, is the love of money the root of all evil?
Right, yes. Is it?
And even that one becomes problematic.
Yeah. But I think the message there, and I could be wrong, I'm not a theologian, is that when money, you know, that entity becomes the be-all and end-all of your life and you're devoted to it, then that can be a problem.
That's certainly true. I'm not sure if that makes it the root of all evil, but that certainly is true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the whole concept of it being the root of all evil is, from my perspective, outside of the whole concept of the law of attraction, it's problematic because it basically posits the idea that if you have any desire at all for money, you are engaging in evil. And that's a problem. Because money is merely a means. It's just a means of exchange.
Right. I think most enlightened preachers are moving away from that and explaining and clarifying.
Thank God, yes.
Is a source, is a tool that can be used to help others. And so when you use money in that way, of course, then there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's what it's intended.
In fact, it's interesting how we tend to, as human beings,
get more money and accumulate more money and save money and you place that above the lives of those around you.
Yeah, it's, right. Yeah. And we as human beings have this tendency to twist it around for almost any possible purpose that you can imagine, whether it to be because somebody wants to blame money or somebody wants to praise money or somebody wants to, you know, in some way exalt it or to condemn it or treat it as if it were dirt or treat it as if it were, you know, the cause of all evils or whatever. And it's just a medium of exchange. It's just a way of retaining value and passing the value along when you're doing trade. That's all it is.
Right.
So we do tend to make a lot out of it. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the most fascinating parts of the whole law of attraction theory is the idea that we live in an abundant universe, mm-hmm. and that the universe is constantly expanding, and that therefore the abundance is constantly expanding for everybody, and it's really our birthright, and, you know, it's available to all of us. And yet we also live in a, quote, real world, unquote, where scarcity tends to dominate. Mm-hmm. That's quite a juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because on the one hand, we have the law of attraction teaching us one thing, and on the other hand, we have this experience of deprivation teaching us the diametric opposite.
Yeah.
That can be that can be a challenge to try to iron that
but
one
you
out.
Know what, Walt, interestingly, as you were saying that, I challenged that thought in my mind, and I think the answer that came to me resoundingly that is also false. The idea that poverty or lack predominates, that is not true. I think there is an effort, whether it's by the media or our culture, to focus on where there's lack and to highlight those and make that the storyline almost every time. Mm-hmm. And most people tend to associate with that for one reason or another. You know, I know that a lot of Christians feel that there's some kind of relationship between poverty and piety, but also, you know, stories of people suffering and not having what they need tends to become, you know, the news of the day. But, you know, one of the interesting things I was reading just, you know, before we got onto the show, you know, the most teachers in LOA are of the opinion that abundance predominates. And if we were to focus our attention on that and try to look for evidence of that abundance, we will actually see that that is more of the default situation for a lot of people. Even for those who we may think might be living in quote-unquote poverty, they might actually be experiencing a lot of abundance in other areas of their life that we're not trained to see, as it were.
I think there's truth to that. In fact, there's quite a bit of scholarly evidence to suggest that there are many people who live, quote, in poverty, unquote, who have very happy lives.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Which doesn't usually get pointed out by the same people who point out the poverty.
Right. Yes, and that is the interesting thing. And then I was reading that, and what they were challenging the reader to do is to retrain our mind and our senses to pick up on these evidence of abundance in the lives of others, but more importantly, in our own lives. Because we tend to focus so much on, of course, the money, how much money we have, whether we have it, whether it's continuing to come, whether we'll have it in the future. And that becomes, that, you know, takes up all of our attention. But they say that to actually begin to feel abundant, because abundance starts with your feelings, is you start by focusing on the areas of your life where you are experiencing abundance already, in spite of how much money you have or don't have.
Well, then let's go to that question, because that really is the central point. Mm-hmm. What does abundance feel like? I mean, that's not an easy question to answer, because it's going to have a different answer for every person, I suppose.
Right.
But let's take a stab at it. What does abundance feel like?
I think for me, abundance feels like freedom.
Yeah, because we associate having money to spend with having the freedom to do what we want to do.
Whatever we want to do, right. And so a lot of times we don't realize just how free we are.
Yeah.
And like I was saying to Mark yesterday babysitting, I don't know what it is, us three brothers and their cousin. He happened to come with the package.
Four young boys.
Yeah, so we took them to the park, and the three younger ones were playing on the playground, you know, the slide and the monkey bars and the other thing. And the older one found a group of people playing soccer, and so they were out there. And so we were just sitting on the bench in the park, and it was, you know, the sun was setting, and it was such a beautiful evening and a beautiful setting, and I just felt so free, and I just felt so abundant.
So abundance was it was the feeling associated with a setting.
Yes, but knowing that I could enjoy this without having to spend any money for it didn't cost me anything. I didn't have to do anything to get it, and I can enjoy it free of charge, and it's available, you know, and just, you know, seeing the boys were playing outside on a free playground in a free park. I mean, we didn't have to spend any money for them to have a good time, the other one found friends and he engaged in a soccer game free, and it was just so freeing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just the fact that we didn't have to pay, but that, you know, we didn't plan it. It just happened. And we didn't have to, like, make all these arrangements or anything. We just sat there and it happened and it worked out and it was beautiful. And Mark was tuning his ukulele and I just felt like the richest woman in the world.
That's fantastic. And it's really points to something that is quite true, I think, which is that abundances like that, abundance experiences, can appear when you least expect them.
Yes, yes.
Which is also a little disconcerting, because if the whole idea is to attract them, you want to have some sort of regularity to the whole thing. But
true, that's right. Fortunately, we do have some guidelines that can help us to make those feelings more frequently. But I think it should be worded as making us more aware, because I think we experience them more than we are aware of, or more we're consciously aware of, that we pay attention to, you know?
I think that's true for a lot of things in regard to this whole concept of the law of attraction.
Yes.
There are so many aspects of life that we filter out. And we've talked about this in the past. We talked about the filtering mechanism in the brain that actually, you know, helps us to keep from going crazy with all the stimulus of the input.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, it comes at a price, and that price is that we have a tendency often to screen out too much.
Yes, yeah. Much to our deficit, we suffer for that.
Maybe we should revisit that for a second. Let's talk for a moment about what can we do to make sure that we're not filtering out too much stuff.
I think taking the time to actually, whether it's be, you know, like we've talked about in the past, first thing in the morning, or remind us throughout the day or at the end of the day, to kind of spend time and talking about those beautiful experiences that we've had and emphasizing them. Because when we stop and we analyze them and we look at them and we talk about them, what it does is that it trains our brain to actually look for them when they are happening in the present moment.
Yeah, that's really a key.
Yeah.
A major key, because we have a tendency, well, I don't know about everybody. I would say people like me perhaps have a tendency to end up focusing on negatives that happen throughout the day. And it's a good reminder to draw us back to, oh, yeah, positives did happen. But if I spend all my time thinking about the negatives, I kind of block them out, which is, right, you know, contraindicative.
Yeah.
That's not really what I want to do.
Exactly. Yeah, our brains are, as we've talked about, they're amazing pattern recognition instruments. And, you know, it's up to us to train our brain into what kind of patterns we want it to recognize.
And I'm constantly amazed and even a little bit disgusted by how many different ways I find myself attracted to negative patterns. And I don't even notice that they're negative patterns until I go out of my way to look for it.
Yeah.
You know, they become such a part of my life on such a regular basis for such a long time that I don't notice.
Yeah.
We just treat them as, you know, nothing. It doesn't really amount to anything.
But well, then it's not a place to stop.
Yeah, they're important to know about, because until you realize that they're not just nothing and that they're not just, you know, unimportant stuff due to the fact that you keep focusing on them.
Right.
You know, then you're not going to learn to stop focusing on it.
Exactly. Because you have to start with actually realizing it first.
That's right.
Uncomfortable and as that may be, but that's the start of something better.
I've also noticed a pattern, too. I don't know if you're familiar with the Secret Scrolls. That's Rhonda Byrne's email list that she sends out. She's been sending that out for the last few years after she published The Secret. And in her emails lately, she's been recounting many of the letters that she got shortly after The Secret came out.
Mm-hmm.
Success stories, people who were heavily influenced, strongly influenced for the good, and so on and so forth. And the one pattern that I keep seeing over and over and over again in the stories is that the storytellers, the people who sent in the letters, almost invariably, or at least a good 90% of the time, describe themselves as being positive people. That to me is quite significant, because I think that I think that positive people have an advantage. People who have been brought up under a positive environment, who have, you know, a largely positive experience in their lives and who have focused on positives for most of their lives, it's easier. It's easier when you have that pattern in place.
Yeah.
But if you're a person who's been through the negativity, or you've been trained to be negative, or you've had very strong negative influences, and you've chosen for whatever reason to focus on negatives throughout your life, that can be a major change for somebody like that. That can be quite a transition.
Right. And it's going to take some effort and reprogramming and disciplining of yourself to actually get there. But yeah, that's true for most everything, not just for the practice of the LOA, you know. Mm-hmm. Think about, like, with our business, you know, it's funny how the same business people can sign up for, and some people can make a success of it, and others can find it absolutely atrocious and a disaster. And you know, it, like you said, it depends on who the person is, not so mm-hmm. much with the business, but just like LOA, it depends on what your propensity has been in the past.
I think that's one of the motivators for me to do this show on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's great if you're a positive person. If you are a person who have not had that orientation, it can be more of a challenge. And that's who I talk to every week.
Yeah.
That's who I think about. Well, partly because that's where I've come from, too. Another interesting fact to go along with that, for the longest time, I didn't think of myself as being a negative person. That can be quite confusing, too.
Right. Because you want, you know, because when you are trying to make those changes, and they're becoming so challenging, and then you hear about people who are making them rather easily, you're thinking, okay, something is definitely wrong here.
It's right. Yeah.
Program or with me. So.
And when you get the message that it's because you're focusing on negativity, the first few times you say, or at least I said, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
And it was only after quite a bit of time, a lot of introspection and so forth, that I began to realize it wasn't that I really liked negativity or anything like that, but mm-hmm. sure enough, I did end up spending a lot of time focusing on negative situations, negative emotions, negative people, negative this, negative that. And after a while, I began to think to myself, my God, I mean, this is like all the time. How on earth have I survived?
Yes, yes, it is quite startling when we actually see ourselves. But the good news is there's hope.
Well, there is hope, yeah. And the one nice thing about having discovered a philosophy like this one is that as you start to apply it, you learn a lot about who you are, where you've come from, what mm-hmm. your beliefs are. You actually get an opportunity to choose beliefs.
Yes.
An opportunity that perhaps you didn't really have before because you just kind of accepted stuff by default. I know that was the case for me. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I've gone through quite a personal revolution, in a sense.
Yeah.
Just unlearning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Unlearning, you know, what my priorities aren't.
Right.
Priorities that I thought were really important now think they seem really unimportant to me.
Yeah.
Priorities I had just 10 years ago.
Wow.
It seemed like, what? Why? What was I thinking?
Yeah, this is actually great. You know, it's. I often think it's unfortunate that we it took us this long to get to this place, but I don't stay there very long. And I think, you know what? I'm glad that I did get there, get here in time where I can actually do something about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that also is a negativity trip.
Yeah.
The whole idea, I mean, I can imagine and have imagined many times, what if growing up, for instance, I went to a Sudbury-style school? People who don't know what a Sudbury-style school is, it's a very free environment where kids basically are in control of their own education, which is quite different from what most people experience going through school. And mm-hmm. I think to myself, wow, if I had actually been able to learn to follow my own inclinations and so forth, instead of just doing what society wanted me to do, you know, I imagine I probably would have latched on to something like this a whole lot quicker.
Yeah.
But that's just another negativity trip.
That's true. You're right.
Just thinking back to, well, you know, thinking in the past, I can't control the past.
Exactly.
It's not like I can go back and change it.
Yeah.
My magic wand doesn't reach that far.
Yeah. And you just kind of have to, what I have learned to do is to appreciate the good things, the for want of a better word, the abundance that I have experienced as a result of my past, in spite of my past. You know, thinking about my religious experience growing up in a very conservative religion, you know, there were lots of things that, you know, I would have liked to not experience. But now that I think about it, I'm grateful for a lot of it. There are a lot of aspects of it that I actually have come to appreciate, you know.
For instance, what?
The routine. Routine, I, you know, there was a time when I thought routine was a bad word. But the routine and, as Edgar Cayce, what does he call that? These traditions.
Tradition,
the traditions, yeah. And, you know, just the going to church on a weekly basis, the friends that I've made over the years and still have through that, and just, you know, the things that I've learned. You know, I've always been an avid reader, and so I got to learn a lot, and I was exposed to a lot, and, you know, now I know both sides of the story, as it were. Mm-hmm. Glad for that.
So you actually have found some ways to feel good about stuff that had some negatives attached to it. That's a strong thing.
Exactly. Yep.
One of Yuona's traditions that I experienced firsthand when I first visited her home in Trinidad was the Sabbath at home singing.
Oh, the family worship.
The family worship.
Yeah. Sessions, yes.
Those Friday nights, right?
Yes, yes. You know what? We used to have those every day, not just on Sabbath.
Oh, just every day. Oh, my gosh.
In fact, there was a period when we had them twice a day.
Wow.
5 o'clock every morning, and then at 7:30 every evening, we had family worship. My mom woke us up in the morning. We would get up and sing and pray and, you know, just thank God before we started our day. And then at the end of the day, we would do the same thing. But on Friday night at the start of the Sabbath, it was an extended service because we sang more songs and, you know, we just kind of, and like Mark was saying, growing up, I never really appreciated that. But now it's like, I tell you, I know a couple hundred songs, if not more, every verse I can sing from memory.
I have to give you credit.
Choruses,
too.
You know, that you sing and clap along to, and you know that was passed on, and now my nieces and nephews sing the same song, and you know, kind of thing. You know, those kinds of traditions I do appreciate. Yeah,
I have to give you credit too, because if somebody were to wake me up every morning at 5 a.m. in order to get me to start singing songs, I'd probably be mouthing some very inappropriate things to say.
You know what? Somehow 5 o'clock seems like a different time now than it did then. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No, I think growing up in the Caribbean, there was always that emphasis. My parents and most everybody on the Caribbean islands took the phrase early to bed, early to wise, make a man healthy, wealthy, and wise, literally. So everybody woke up early. And there was this thing about not letting the sun rise before you. Like, you would be unhealthy and just be, I don't know, depressed. Just your day would just not go good if the sun woke up before you.
Interesting how what was essentially an agrarian tradition turned into a cliche and a
right.
lifestyle.
Yes. Well, you know, my parents kind of grew up agrarian, so I think that's where that came from. You know, they both grew up on farms, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that, but you know, it was something that most of the Caribbean, even though they were transitioning out of that lifestyle into a more developed society in Trinidad, they still kept some of those traditions, especially mm-hmm. waking up early thing.
Did it make them wise?
I suppose, in their way, definitely healthier.
We never do a scientific check on these things, so I thought
That's
I'd
right.
ask.
No, but you know, now that I've gotten older, I see the wisdom in those things. Though, oh my God, my body clock has changed to a more American way of life, where you know. The lights stay on almost 24/7, and now with technology and the computer and the iPhone, you know, you can go, you know, it's almost as if night never comes. And I tell you, I just don't like it. It does not feel good. I wish I could go to bed as early as I used to and wake up as early as I did before.
It does make a difference to who you're married to.
Yes, I know.
Yes. Well, on that pleasant note, we're about halfway through. Actually, we're more than halfway through. We're overdue to take a break. Let's take a break. And then after the break, let's continue with this interesting discussion about how we get into these patterns of habits and ultimately how they tie into the question of wealth and getting into that wealth-minded abundant attitude and the attitude of gratitude that goes along with it. Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. This is LOA Today here on PRN. We will be back after these messages.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt, Fiona, and Mark on this Thursday, April 9, 2015, talking about the attitude of abundance and how abundance feels so that we can attract a more abundant and more wealthy life into our lives. During the break, we were talking about how easy it is to get into that negative pattern. We were talking about that before the break, of course, and how challenging it can be to get into the positive pattern. That's probably a good place to start here, the second part of the show, because getting into the positive pattern, that's where it's at. That's where all the good stuff happens.
Yes, that's where all the good stuff happens. You know, I've heard a quotation that says, successful people are no different from you and I. They just have better habits.
And apparently they have happier days.
Yes, but you know, every time I hear that, I want to slap somebody.
Okay, so we have a little bit to work on here.
Yes, we do.
It isn't so much that I want to slap somebody, it's that I keep wondering why it is that my attention keeps drawn to the wrong stuff.
Mm.
Because I start working through my day, and very often, within 10 minutes, I find myself on the wrong stuff.
And
then it's a question of how do I get back out of it? Because I am in the middle of a task that's, you know, relevant and important to what I'm doing during the day. Making the shift during a task, that's my biggest, I don't know what to call it, my biggest bugaboo, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can, once I've got a task out of the way, I'm taking a break, I'm on to something new, you know, I've gone to have lunch, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can at least have the chance to think about, how did it go? Oh, could have gone a little bit better. I could have been focusing a little bit better. What can I focus on that's good? You know, that kind of thing. I can do that away from it. But during the task, mm-hmm. I get so monomaniacal about it. I get really focused on what it is that I'm doing. And it's so easy for me to end up on the negative track and not even know about it till after I'm done with the task. That to me is my biggest challenge. Any ideas on that?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I know what that's like, trying to write a paper or something.
Yeah. It's like trying to write a paper and not realizing that the paper is putting you into a bad mood at the time that you're writing it.
Right. And the thing is, you know, it doesn't have to be like, sometimes it's a paper that I want to write, a topic that I'm interested in and I like. But all it takes is might be a sentence that I just can't structure properly, and I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Oh yeah.
And I realize that our brain, as you know, programmed as they are, your brain avoids, even though it's good for you, it avoids challenges because it's new and different, and it likes sameness. So anytime you're faced with a challenge, as minor as it is, the default of your brain is to avoid it, to either procrastinate about it, to bitch and moan about it, or to just kind of suffer through it, you know. Those are not the only alternatives, fortunately. And for me, what I find, and this is the bad habit I do, is I get distracted and I go surf the internet.
You should specify which part of the brain wants this. It's the, right, the, I'm not sure what the technical terms are, but the reptilian brain.
Right, the reptilian brain that is involved in keeping you alive, basically. Because all it wants to do is breathe and eat and those kind of.
It doesn't want to learn anything new.
It doesn't want to learn anything new, really.
Oh, yeah. So here you are calling me a lizard head again. Okay.
Yeah, the lizard just wants to sleep in the sunshine. You know, if there are no threats, why bother?
But I like sleeping in the sunshine. No, sorry, go ahead.
To learn and grow. I missed what you said.
I said, but I like sleeping in the sunshine.
Right, yes, of course. But you can get eaten doing that. You know that, right?
Yeah, that's true. Probably by another lizard brain, but.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, but the moment I realized that this is what's going on, one of the things that has helped me is EFT, tapping, the emotional freedom technique, where you tap on the meridian points.
Okay.
Yes, and whenever I feel that urge and I remember, I'm aware of it, I can do a quick round of tapping, and that kind of gets me out of that block, as it were, which is usually what it is. It's usually an emotional or a psychological block to growth and progress and to your success.
Because I have to admit, I have an emotional block to tapping. I really do. Let's face it, the law of attraction is pretty esoteric. But tapping is so esoteric, it's outside of my range. It's outside of my comfort zone.
Yes. Yeah, you know, but interestingly enough, there are some people who will tap, but they don't believe in LOE. You know, I don't know.
Well, they're just weird. I mean,
because, you know, the thing is that I think, for me, they kind of complement each other, because the law of attraction is all about energy and you know, being aware of your energy and your vibrational state. And emotional freedom technique is a technique that is an adaptation of, you know, old Chinese medicine with the
acupuncture
points and the meridians, which are energy
centers
in your body. And what they found is that a lot of times when you have these negative feelings, it's because your energy is blocked and it's not flowing like it should be. And simply tapping on these meridian points helps to unclog these energy, the meridian points, to open them up so the energy can flow. And Walt, they have actually done research, laboratories on this technique, and found that it does work. It does actually affect areas of your brain, most notably the amygdala and the areas associated with stress. They found that tapping actually helps calm those areas of the brain and reduce stress and anxiety. So there is something to it.
So what's the technique? Describe the tapping technique.
So you just take your two fingers, your forefinger and your middle finger, and you tap the meridian points, one of which is right between your eyes on your brow.
Yeah, everybody seems to like that point. It doesn't matter.
Yes,
what esoteric religion you believe in.
EFT actually do that, and they're saying that that's probably where it originated.
Uh-huh, okay. Well,
or
everybody claims,
everybody
lays claim to that inner eye. I mean, they all seem to want it, so.
Yes, right, yes. Every school of ancient medicine seemed to have that.
All the Eastern, they're all into the third eye and has all kinds of religious and spiritual symbolism.
Yeah, all my Indian friends have that dot or a thing or something right there in the third eye, because they believe in keeping that open. It's important for especially learning. But anyway, that's one point. The other one is at the side of the eye. The other is right under the eye, then right under the nose, then right below the lips, and then on either side of the collarbone, and then under the arm. And you tap on those areas. And sometimes the top of the head. There are quite a few, but sometimes it just requires two or three points, or maybe even just one. And you tap there briefly. And you may or may not repeat certain phrases, whether it's an affirmation or something along the lines like, even though I'm so frustrated with this paper right now, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. And you take a deep breath, like, and you sigh.
See, I do all that without the tapping.
True, you can.
Just because I'm self-conscious, I don't really want to stand in the mirror looking at myself, you know, tapping in the middle of my third eye while I'm doing all this stuff.
Oh, but that helps, Walt. You know, mentioning that, because I don't do it looking at it in the mirror, but that's what they actually encourage, because there's something that happens when you talk to yourself looking at yourself.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
And I want it to be a positive experience. I mean, so many of us have fears and insecurities and so forth about talking to ourselves in the mirror or talking to ourselves in any circumstance. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to do is make myself feel really bad by talking to myself while I'm tapping myself on the forehead.
But you know what? That's one of the things that EFT teaches you is to accept your feelings. In fact, they encourage you while you're going through the process to really identify those negative feelings, to really kind of feel them and tap them away, really bring them to the surface so you can deal with them. Because our culture teaches us to bury and deny and to refute our feelings so much, and that only makes them stronger.
Well, then, this is creating a very amusing image in my head, because I have this image of myself tapping myself on the forehead, saying, "I really, really don't like this tapping myself on the forehead. In fact, I really despise it, and I keep tapping myself on the forehead."
That's perfect. That's it.
I mean, that's something out of a Far Side cartoon.
Yeah. Oh, you should see some of the YouTube videos. You know, they, you know, the teachers will tell you, say whatever it is you feel like, and they'll say, "I really hate this teacher right now," and you tap through that. And then they'll ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong is that feeling? And you tap until that feeling goes down, and hopefully it goes down to 0. There was this one guy who was tapping because he hated President Obama. Just the thought of President Obama would make him so angry he would want to cry.
And tapping actually took that away?
Tapping actually took that away. By the end of it, they asked him about it, and he said, "Oh, I don't even care about President Obama anymore." You know.
So I have to ask you, why haven't the Democrats mandated tapping?
Yeah, it was clear that he had some negative emotion associated with President Obama. Who knows where that came from? But tapping, one of the most powerful demonstrations of the effect of tapping is people with phobias. And they've recorded live sessions where people would face their fear of snakes or spiders or height or whatever it is. And through tapping, they were able to actually overcome that to the point where they can, you know, get the snake out of the cage and touch it and play with it and not even be afraid anymore. So it is actually a very powerful technique.
I'm not sure I really want to do that. I mean, I think there's actually some value to being afraid of a snake. Like, I don't want to be near
absolutely.
One.
You know, there's just some people who, you know, people have used it for fear of flying. You know, they couldn't get on the airplane to go to their daughter's wedding or whatever the case may be. So fears that were probably, you know, incapacitating their lives were more.
Yeah, I don't want to be incapacitated, but I also don't want to take away the warning signal.
Right, yes.
You are about to be bitten on the leg.
Right, yeah, I think the idea
is... Oh, I feel so sublime.
Not to let these things dominate, because for a lot of people, there was a lot of emotional stress associated with those fears.
Yes, yeah, and that really is not a laughing matter, because that stress, well, we've detailed the physiological aspects of that. You've talked about that a lot.
Yes.
But just the emotional side of it, stress like that, It's immobilizing.
Yes,
it can actually just stop you in your tracks,
right,
and keep you from progressing.
Cold and solid, cannot move. One of the more beautiful sides of EFT is that one practitioner is using it to help a lot of veterans who were experiencing post-traumatic stress syndrome. They've helped use EFT to help them, because medication and all the other therapies were not helping for a lot of them, and EFT did. So I am a big believer in EFT.
I got to ask you one thing, though.
Sure.
I wonder if there are alternatives to tapping. For instance, the whole concept of tapping, I have a negative association with it because I don't like anything that even remotely smacks of hitting yourself. So I wonder if touching is enough.
Yes. In fact, it is. You know, it's funny that you would say that, because I often chide your brother because he...
I'm very gentle with my tap.
He taps himself almost barely. And I say, "Are you sure you're doing anything?" But no, they say, especially one guy says, you know, if you're driving in your car and you don't want people to think you're some nutcase, you know, whatever. He said you can touch it, or you can even imagine yourself touching it.
Really?
Yes.
Just imagining
yes.
is enough.
Yes, it's about, you know, controlling energy. And we know that we can do that on planes that are outside of the normal senses. So, you know, whatever works for you. For some people, you know, their faith, as it were, is not as strong. So they have to kind of do the physical manipulation of it. But, you know, there are practitioners who've gotten so good where they can just think about it. And I think it's more about acknowledging the emotion and sort of accepting it, letting it kind of come to the surface and then letting it dissipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. And yeah. It also makes sense to me that it shouldn't have to be about an actual tap, because for me, just a gentle stroke is a lot more sensually meaningful. It's more sensory positive for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I imagine that's probably true for other people too. So, Mark, I'm very glad to hear that you're very gentle with yourself when you do tapping. I think it's wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, there was one time we would do tap each other, and I was saying, "You gotta tap me."
Yeah, that was the first time she realized how gentle I was doing, because I did it to her, and she goes, "You're barely touching me."
She, you know, I'm a more sensory. I need to feel something.
I could go there, but I'm not going to. So many ideas, so little time.
I'll just make one comment. I said, you have these big, long, hard fingers. Tap!
Well,
okay, we're done off that topic.
I will interject just this one thought. Mark is a skilled drummer.
Yes. Yes, that's true. You are absolutely right.
So if he really wants to tap harder, he can.
Yes, I know. Yes.
And he can do it quickly.
Yes.
Enough said.
Mark is turning red right now.
Sorry, bro. Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes left. Let's see if we can take this back to the original topic. Because the original topic, as you might remember, is wealth and abundance and attracting wealth and abundance into our lives.
Yeah.
And we got off onto the tapping thing because that's a nice way to, in its many manifestations, get us into a more positive frame of mind when we're stuck in a more negative frame of mind. So that's a good thing all by itself. But let's go back to the abundance thing. Okay. Abundance happens when we are able to focus, what, a majority of the time on positive stuff? What do you think?
I don't know if the word majority sounds like a too huge a challenge. But I think every time we can get to that place of abundance, it helps. Every time we can be in that emotional state or vibrate from that energy level, we are sending out those messages to the universe, and it's going to bring abundance back into our experience, whether it's in the form of money or in form of love, in the form of happiness and friendship. In some way, shape, or form, it's going to attract that back into our lives. So, you know, we want to do it as much as we possibly can.
That is true. And you mentioned a number of possible abundances to attract in, not just money.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is a key point to the whole thing, which is that abundance, the feeling that is associated with abundance, goes far beyond wealth.
Right.
It goes to what, life wealth, I guess you might call it.
Yes, exactly, and to freedom, which is what we really want the money for, anyways.
Right. Right. And the other part about freedom, of course, is recognizing no matter what the circumstances are that you're in, the freedom is remarkable.
Yes, actually, yes.
It's so easy for us to forget that, but it really is remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's there every moment of every day.
We can choose it.
We can choose it whenever we want it.
Yes.
And the good, really good news is that the government can't take it away from you.
Right, they can't.
It's yours for the taking.
Yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah, we are really much more abundant than we realize. And so that's why Esther Hicks says, you know, a poverty mindset is basically pinching off the abundance that already exists.
Yeah, I like that word that she uses, pinching.
Yeah.
Pinching off the abundance, pinching off connection to the spirit.
Yes.
To the vortex, as you like to describe it. Yeah. The pinching thing is a good idea in terms of a metaphor, because it's as if you took it, you took your connection to all that is good and just closed it up so you can't get to it, like closing up a vein or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it can't flow anymore. So all you have to do is to release the pinch and it'll flow again.
And that actually touches on something that could probably be an entire topic. But the topic is, what do you do when you're not sure or you aren't even aware of how you're pinching? That's something I've given a lot of attention to that question over time. And I have to admit, in the process of doing so, I have opened up to myself things that I didn't realize were issues before.
It
becomes a method of exploration for me. But I could also see how for somebody else it could be just the opposite. It could be something where it becomes an excuse to close off some more. So it could work either way. It's one of those two-edged sword things. So that makes it kind of challenging. Well, anyway, we've got about 2 minutes left, something like that. Maybe we do a little quick summary. What is your favorite form of abundance in your life right now? Give you a second to think about that one. And members of our listening audience, maybe you can think about what is your favorite form of abundance right now in your life. No matter what your financial circumstances might be, what feels most abundant to you? If I have to pick something right now out of thin air, for me it's that we now have spring temperatures here. I actually had to go take a long walk today. It was nice and sunny and blue skies and puffy clouds. The very things I've been thinking about quite lately for quite some time happened today.
It has manifested.
It did manifest, and it was wonderful. In fact, I was the only frustration was that I couldn't get out earlier.
Oh, wow.
But it was great once I got out.
Yeah.
So, Yoana, what's the biggest abundance in your life right now?
Oh, my sweet honey, Mark. His blue eyes. It's like there's no end to it. when I stop and think about, all the things I'd like to have and things to be different, and then I think about, the love that I have received and continue to receive from him. It makes me feel very, very abundant.
Well, I think this is probably a set of question, but Mark, what's the biggest abundance in your life right now?
Well, just living in our new house in Florida makes me feel very abundant. It's big, and Florida itself is like this giant park that we can just enjoy and partake of every day.
Every day, all day. It's great.
So you're saying that Florida is like Disney World?
Well, I'm thinking more of, gardens and trees and
that kind of park.
That kind of park.
Not a theme park. Okay.
No.
Although it's that too.
So basically you have found heaven on earth.
Well, that's the way it feels.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's good. That's a great thing. And that's a great way to end the program. I mean, what better way to do it than on a very high note?
Yes.
So, Mark, Yoana, thank you so much for having this conversation, because I think we've all ended up on that high note. We feel like we're in a better place.
Definitely, as a result, yes.
And we want to thank you all for listening, too. We hope you'll join us next week here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye. Crazy what I'm about to say.